Hello, it is 6 a.m. in New York, 12 p.m. in Johannesburg, and 5 p.m. in Bangkok. Welcome to the Expat Happy Hour. This is Sunday Schneider Bean from SundayBean.com. I am a solution-oriented coach and intercultural strategist for individuals and organizations, and I am on a mission to help you adapt and succeed when living abroad and get you through any life transition. I remember when I was in Switzerland, I self-diagnosed an ulcer. And this was back when we weren't relying on Google for all of our symptoms. But I do think at that time that I had what was close to being an ulcer. And I looked at things I was eating. Is it from onions? Is it from raw cauliflower? What is causing this stomach pain that I never had when I lived in the United States? It must be the food. Fast forward 3.5 years later, I was doing some reading in preparation for my master's degree in intercultural communication. In a book from Milton Bennett, I read that when you're living in a new culture and you're feeling frustrated, if you don't let your frustrations out, let's say on the locals or some other, you know, externalized thing, it can manifest itself into physical symptoms. And then the light bulb went on. When I moved to Switzerland, I was undergoing an incredible amount of stress, but because I was so focused on adapting and getting to know the locals and the environment and making the most of it, that stress was internalized. And when I went back to the US for my master's degree, that suddenly went away. So there is a place for venting your frustrations in a healthy way, and no one knows that better than Allison Trainer, the founder of Grumpy Expats. Now, Allison is the fearless leader of a Facebook group that is home to more than 4,000 members. And when she started it, I remember I was on vacation in Thailand and I saw this group come up and it spread like wildfire. Allison has pinned at the top of the group, "I created this group so we could find each other and support each other through the ups and downs of expat life," which, as you know, if you've been following me on social media or the Expat Happy Hour, I wholeheartedly agree in that. She says, "Sometimes the only thread that connects us is profound homesickness, loneliness, and a frustration with the local language." So Allison, it is such a pleasure to have you on Expat Happy Hour today.
Thank you for having me.
So if you don't know Allison from the Facebook group, what might surprise you is that Allison is an award-winning opera singer, and she's performed on prestigious stages across Switzerland and the U.S., and she still makes time for being a fearless leader of this much-needed Facebook group. So, Allison, you are just amazing. And I also, she's a mom and in a binational marriage, so if anybody knows the struggles of expat life, it's you, Allison.
Yes.
So tell us, for those of you who don't know your story, can you share with us, how does a successful opera singer from the United States find her way in Switzerland?
Sure. Well, I had been singing quite a bit in the United States, and I wanted to live in Europe. I wanted to finally become fluent in German, and there are so many wonderful opera houses in German-speaking countries. So I came to Europe on 3 separate audition trips. And finally, at the end of my 3rd audition trip, I landed a job. We call them fest contracts because they are sort of consistent contracts with an opera company year-round. And so I got a job at Theater St. Gallen, which is in Switzerland, about an hour from Zurich. And it was amazing. I could actually sing opera many different roles a year and sleep in the same bed at night and not have to travel all the time. So it was a welcome shift in my career. And at that time, I had a theater tribe of people that were international. Everyone was an expat, not one single Swiss singer. So basically, it was a tribe of expats, and we had each other for comfort, and that was kind of life-saving. That was pretty much the only thing that got me through, I think.
So this is pre-kids and pre-husband, right?
Well, I met Stefan. I met him about 6 months in. And I'll tell you something funny. I had been living in New York for 10 years, and I dated, you know, and I knew that I wanted kids, but I didn't meet anyone really perfect for me. And then when I got this job in Switzerland, I thought, oh no, I guess that's the end of my, you know, fantasy about having a family, because who on earth am I going to meet in Switzerland in a small city where they speak Swiss German and, you know, where the population of the theater is often, we have a high percentage of gay men. So it's not exactly conducive to dating if you're a straight woman. So I thought my family dreams were over. But then amazingly, I met Stefan about 6 months into my time at the theater. And we had our first baby, I guess, in my third year at the theater.
And, you know, for those of you who are in a binational relationship like Allison and I, it is kind of a scary thing to think, you know, when you fall in love with someone, it's not like a choice. You know, this is like, this just happens. And then you're like, dang it. So if I really stick with this real thing, that means I'm choosing a binational life for the for the rest of the relationship or the rest of your lives if you happen to have kids together. Yeah. It's kind of a scary thing.
You know, I really didn't give it the thought that I should have given it.
Stefan, I hope you're not listening to this right now.
Well, I don't think he did either. You know, when you fall in love with somebody and, you know, you don't, those aren't the things you're thinking about. It just seems, to be honest, it literally never occurred to me that I might stay in Switzerland for the rest of my life. And it was really only having children where I became profoundly homesick. And nostalgic for the United States, because beforehand it had never seemed permanent, so I didn't really worry about it too much. And I was having
having kids was the thing that made it feel like you were.
Yes.
I don't want to say stuck, because that's a negative connotation. But in many ways, when you are in a binational family, legally you do have. You are stuck in some ways.
Right. Right. Well, and actually, we did not marry. And that actually, you know, gives me some more legal freedom than somebody who marries. So that's also kind of an interesting side topic that we can hit on. But we didn't marry. But we, you know, we're completely together. And we have two children. And really, for me, when I was working, I was happy. And then when I had children, and then later when I left the job, that is when the real challenges of expat life really, really hit me.
Right, because your identity, I'm guessing, is very, very tied to being an opera singer.
Oh, it's everything. I mean, it's been everything since I was 12 years old. So it was very challenging.
Right. So when you give that up and you don't, you're not in your home nest, so to speak.
Yes.
Then you could feel really isolated. So tell me, what was going on because you might have a similar struggle that someone who's listening has had. Tell me what it was like when it was really tough in the beginning.
You know, the toughest thing for me was when I got pregnant, and I sang all the way through my pregnancy until about 8 months. And then I went to live with Stefan and I, we had actually been living apart, an hour apart, because he had his job in Zurich and I had my job in St. Gallen. And then as soon as I went on maternity leave, I moved to where he was living, which was about a half an hour outside of Zurich, in a town along the lake that was very beautiful, but you couldn't even walk to a coffee shop. It was just completely isolated. So there I was, pregnant, isolated, didn't really know anybody out there, didn't have my family or friends. And then I gave birth and had really no one around me. It was incredible. And it was only through a Facebook group that I was able to connect with other moms, other English speaking moms. But that didn't happen for me until I would say 2 months after my child was born. So that was probably that was sort of the first big event where I thought, oh God, what have I done? You know, what have I done? And we are not meant to have babies alone. And I missed everything about the States. You know, I know that in the States we're a little bit overly obsessed with pregnancy, but I missed having people dote on me and I missed pregnancy being so celebrated the way it is in the States. And then I missed having anyone to help me afterwards. It was really hard.
Right. Because that's the thing about expat life is you leave your familiar comforts of home, cultural practices, mm-hmm. and are rebuilding a community, and that, which takes time. And if some big event happens, whether that's birth of a child, a wedding, a job loss, that's when in any context we need more support. Yes. And it's harder for expats because it's not necessarily built in.
Absolutely. And, you know, I know you talk a lot about trailing spouses, and I was not a trailing spouse because I came here for a job. However, I almost turned into a trailing spouse when I gave up my job and moved to Zurich. You know, I turned 40. I had two babies that were 11 months apart, and I gave up my beloved opera singing job all in the same, you know, year and a half time period. And that would be hard anywhere. But if you're living in a foreign country with a foreign language without your friends and family, it's just, I mean, as a friend of mine said, you know, that's like a recipe book for midlife crisis. It's really so much to handle all at once.
Oh, yeah. And I have chills on the top of my arms when you say that, because what we know about change mm-hmm. is that, you know, you work hard to establish a life that you're comfortable with. And if something happens, they call it a catalytic event, that you fall into what Martha Beck calls square one. And that's literally like, I don't know what the hell is going on, you know, and you really don't. Who am I? Where am I going? What does this mean? And you really, really, really need to make sure that you're comforting yourself and you're feeling like you can take it day by day, because at that point, it's hard to make a plan. You need to take it day by day until you find your feet again.
And at that point, you're just kind of surviving. I mean, honestly, at that point, with two babies at home and, you know, stage has always been my outlet. I could work out all my drama on the stage and then come home and be nice and calm. Mm-hmm. But without right. that, and with two babies and then toddlers at home, that was the real challenge, was, you know, having the patience to take it day by day. That's not something that I'm used to having to really do. And that was very, very difficult.
I think that's hard too for also the partner. So you're the expat, they're the partner, and they meet you, whether it's abroad, on some adventure, or wherever you are, they meet you, and they meet this confident, successful, yes. interesting individual. Yes. And you bring them out of their context, and they come into a new place, and they probably, you don't recognize yourself,
right.
and your partner barely recognizes you.
Yes, you know, I remember, imagine that he might have thought, you know, gosh, this isn't what I thought. This isn't the person that I right. fell in love with, because he met me when I was, you know, singing on stage and going to premiere parties and, you know, really at the top of my game. And then all of that came crashing down, and he's left with this sort of depressed partner. And I think it's been, you know, equally hard on him, or almost equally hard on him.
Right. And I remember, you know, I met my husband in Vietnam, and he saw me hitchhiking. I shouldn't say this. My mom was listening. She won't listen to it anyway. So hitchhiking from Vietnam to Laos across an uncommon border crossing. Like, everybody goes to this one, and I didn't want to do that. I wanted to go to a less common one. And I ended up hitching a ride to between the borders, Vietnam and Laos, and my boyfriend, not my boyfriend, this guy I thought was cute, which is now my husband, was with me, and this other friend. And so he saw me, you know, investigating where could we cross the border, finding a way to make it happen, even though it wasn't common, you know, catching rides. And then fast forward to being in Switzerland, he saw me sort of stall in front of the sandwiches, because it was either salami, ham, or cheese, right? Those are the three options, at least in 1999. And he's like, I don't get it. He's like, this woman, you know, and especially in the U.S., you have Subway, you can order, you know, thousands of breads and options. He's like, I don't understand why you stall
yes.
in front of these three sandwiches when you can, you know, get us from Vietnam to Laos on foot.
Yes.
You know, but then I didn't, you know, I'm also, you know, I would have him call and make my dentist appointments or my gynecologist
yes.
appointments. They feel so dependent because yes. of their language difference.
Well, and this is another thing, you know, we would actually have been more independent if we hadn't had them. But there's some comfort that we expect expect to be able to feel wherever we're living. So, you know, when you're in Vietnam or Thailand or wherever, you are in a sort of a heightened state and you're excited and you're motivated to navigate and communicate at a very heightened energy level. But when you come home, we don't want to use that kind of energy at home. We want to feel comforted and safe, and we want things to be easy at home. And so when we come home and it doesn't feel like home, and every single conversation you have to have is a headache, and you have to gather your strength just to make a phone call, that feels like the opposite of home.
And right. And
there's no safe place to land. You know, there is no home.
And that's why a lot of expats revert to their bubble, because that's the only place they can be safe and feel comfortable. I want to point something out for those of you who are listening. And if you're either in a binational relationship or intercultural relationship, or you're thinking about it, I think it's really important to draw what we talked about out, in sense of, if you did meet someone outside of your home context and now they're in your space or you're in a new context, that this transition phase that's bumpy doesn't mean that it's the wrong relationship. It might mean this is someone who has to reinvent him or herself, and you will be through that reinvention process there by their side. That this is not just one person doing their thing on their own. This is a partnership, or you need support.
Yes.
And difficulty in the beginning doesn't mean it was the wrong choice.
Right.
So I think that's really important for people to keep in mind. The other thing I think is that the independence that you know of someone, that shifts temporarily when you're in new context, because it's new and you're learning things, like a toddler learns how to walk.
Yes.
And I think the danger.
It's totally overwhelming. And so whoever it is that's the expat in this scenario may have moments of weakness that are a little bit shocking if you've formerly seen them be very strong. But that's normal, because there's so much stimulus at this point. When you're in a foreign country, it's completely overwhelming.
And so if you're the one having moments of weakness, know that this is normal, that this is an outcome of the what you're going through. And I always say that your success abroad is determined by your strategies. So if you're using the wrong strategies, things can go downhill fast. If you're using the right strategies, you can get out of it. So tell me, Allison, what have been the things that you have found work best for you?
Well, first of all, I just want to say that we tend to come into the expat scenario with really high hopes and some very unrealistic expectations about how long it might take us to feel comfortable, especially if you don't have a job at the time and you might end up looking for work and you're looking to make new friends. I mean, this takes time. And we tend to be so hard on ourselves when it doesn't happen overnight. But it can take, you know, a year or two or three to feel like you even can walk into a store comfortably and ask for what you need. And that's normal.
Right.
So we kind of have to fasten our seatbelts and expect that it might take an uncomfortably long period of time. And then in the meantime, you know, just because we've moved to a completely foreign place, we are still ourselves. And so for me, what that means is I'm a huge extrovert. I need a lot of social interaction. And so I have really put a lot of time and energy into meeting people. And, you know, at first I was sort of turned off by the whole expat bubble concept, until I realized that I really needed that. Not that I need to stay in a bubble, but that I need to reach out to other expats, because there's nothing more comforting than sitting around and talking to other English speakers. And, you know, especially North Americans, it's a very comfortable experience. And I don't think you should deny yourself that. I think everybody should dive into that, because it is not in contradiction with making local friends. You can do both.
So what I always recommend to people, I call it the SML strategy. So short term, medium term, and long term. The short term could be, hey, I have a real need for connection.
Yes.
I don't want to be by myself all weekend, so I'll go to the meetup from Internations, for example.
Exactly.
Medium term is I'm going to do something that I love. Like I'm going to do a yoga class, or I'm going to do a pottery course, even if I don't understand it, because then I'll be doing something I care about with people who probably also think that's nice, which expands your chance of creating connections there. And the long term is not giving up on your work colleagues, your neighbors, or the people that are in your local context. And like Switzerland, it takes a lot of time to meet people. It, the same thing to meet locals in Burkina Faso. It, some contexts are because of the complexity and the culture and the background, the history, mm-hmm. take longer to meet local people than others. And you need a strategy to get your needs for connection met and not, but I think that the danger of it is to not give up for the long term, to just only stay with the short term. Because if you stop with the short term, I think you miss out on really excellent long-term benefits.
Yes, absolutely. And it's indeed the long term that I felt like I struggled with the most, because I couldn't see a long term. I thought, how on earth can I ever live in Switzerland for years at a time when I find the people unfriendly? And it took some time for me to sort of decode typical Swiss behavior, to understand that it isn't always unfriendly. It's just very different. And that understanding really took me a very long time.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think that's, as intercultural specialists, that's one thing I really work on with people is, how do you look at where you're at from a neutral lens, from their values, their priorities, and not judge it through our own?
Yes.
Okay, Allison, so we've been talking about strategies. I mentioned about being intercultural specialists and how neutrality is really important when you try to see things through other people's lens. And that is hard because, especially if you're homesick, you want things that are feel in alignment with your values and your priorities. And it's then hard to ask someone to see it from a different perspective. So let's look
like you said, if you touched on, you know, being homesick, it's one thing if you're safely in your home country, then you can look at other cultures with all the patience in the world. But when you're actually living in another country and you might feel tired and frustrated and up against a wall because you can't find a job or you can't communicate with the repair person that just came to fix your washing machine, those things, they tend to add up and build up the frustration level. And so that's when it's much, much harder to be neutral.
Right. And that's why having resilience is so important, because if you're strong and you're well, you've slept well and your needs are getting met, then it's so much easier to handle. But if you're not doing that, then you can stay frustrated all the time. So tell me, Allison, what made you decide to start the group Grumpy Expats?
Well, I just started in on a whim because I had been complaining so much to my Swiss partner. And that was also a challenge because, and I don't know if it's cultural with the Swiss, but every time I needed to vent or talk about my frustrations, he perceived it as complaining. And so that was a challenge because I wanted to be able to open up and share all my dark feelings with my partner, but I didn't want him to think of me as this whiny complainer. And so I realized I needed a safe place where I could vent and not offend anybody.
And a lot of couples, and that's kind of a gender communication too, if you share, you want to communicate and share what's bad, to vent, to let it out, a lot of partners have a communication cell, then they want to fix it.
Yes.
It's not to be fixed.
Either that or it just hurt his feelings, because I was often saying negative things about Switzerland or Swiss people or Swiss culture. And you know what? I might not even really mean it. I was just kind of venting frustrations. And he would, of course, take it personally because it's his culture. So I had to have another place where I could let it out and also just see things with humor. You know, get some support, give some support, and maybe see a little bit of humor in the situation.
So this is not an easy task because you exploded. I remember seeing, you know, it went from like 100 to 300 to 500 to 1,000 to 4,000 members. Yeah. And you manage a group where you invite grumpiness, right? But from the outside, people might think that it's a venting session with a capital B, if you know what I'm saying.
Yes.
It's not. You really have very, very strict guidelines on how you want people to treat each other.
Yes.
So tell me, what do you love about being the administrator of Grumpy Expats? What value do you see it serve? And tell me maybe some of great stories that you've heard based on what you've seen happen in the group.
Well, what I love the most is when someone tells me or writes that the group has been helpful to them. Because I think we can all feel very alone, but clearly we're not alone. Clearly we're sharing this really challenging experience. And so people have written to me and said how much it's helped them, how much it's sort of saved them get through the roughest parts of being an expat. And then also, you know, we've been able to connect people. So expats, you know, British expats living in Dubai, for example, you know, they find each other in the group and then they actually meet and become friends. And so that's definitely the most rewarding part of the group. And in the rougher moments when I've thought about shutting it down, those are the stories that make me want to keep it open and deal with the occasional trolling or whatever any Facebook page is going to experience.
But you know, this group, this idea of connection, I think what you offer in the Grumpy Expat group, because there were even memes being created within the group. And what that does is, like you said, what I see it doing, Allison, is that really brings out the value that you have of seeing the humor through hard times.
Yes.
And absolutely, that's something that has happened through the group. And you are good about trying to be clear about nobody's bashing anybody. There's no room for racism or sexism in the group. That it's, let's get it out so we can move forward. And I think that's a lesson I want to just share with the listeners, is that when you're feeling frustrated, I would always go to, well, what's going on? What needs aren't being met right now? And that need for connection or being understood might be what that is. And what can you do to sort of move forward? For some people, it might be exercising. Others, it might be venting. Some, it might be a phone call home. Others, it might be planning. But whatever you need to do to move forward healthily, productively, so it doesn't go down that downward spiral that we were talking about earlier.
And you know, people have different ways of coping with their feelings, but my belief is that it's kind of based on that saying that secrets make you sick. I just believe that sometimes you need to feel a little sorry for yourself, and you need to actually experience those feelings. And sometimes, for example, if I'm feeling really depressed about something or really worried about something, I will say to myself, all right, you have the next 30 minutes to worry your face off, and then we're done. Yeah. And that helps, because it's giving me, or it's giving the person, permission to wallow in whatever bad feelings they have. And culturally, so many cultures really want to deny us that opportunity to feel our negative feelings. And I think we need to, in order to be able to really move forward. So what I hope people get out of the group is that they can vent their horrible day, vent the awful experience they had with the locals or with the local schools or whatever challenges they're facing, connect with other people who've had similar experiences, vent their frustrations, laugh about it, maybe give some constructive ideas, as long as it's, you know, with empathy and understanding. And then that's when people can take the first step towards resolving problems, towards being productive, and towards sort of making a plan to get through some of their challenges.
Right. And I think that this idea about moving forward is so important, that if you stay stuck in anything, whether it's frustration, loneliness, or homesickness, it could even get dangerous, you know.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely,
it could break up a relationship. It could lead to severe depression. That I think people, oftentimes, there's this huge pressure to do the DIY of our expat life. Like, everybody has to do it on their own.
Yeah.
And you know, we're so independent. We moved across the world, but listen, there are times where people need support. We need connection. And
absolutely.
And I think that even on an online group, let's say Facebook or other forums, you can begin the connection process. And as long as you can take that to gain, what should I say, inspiration or confidence or energy to get out there in the physical world with your face in your face context, so that you can take that positivity and make it happen instead of retreating. And I think that's some of the dangers of an online community, is that then we stay stuck instead of getting out of the house. And
some of my favorite stories, and you're right, because this doesn't happen. I know that there are many situations where people are just kind of wallowing and posting and reading and wallowing and posting and reading for months on end. But I also love, love, love hearing the stories from people or reading these stories where somebody's having a challenge and they're nervous about it or stressed about it, then many members of the group sort of mirror and validate their feelings, offer empathy, offer support, and then sometimes even help them make a plan. You know, you see people coming together to help someone make a plan. And then when that person follows through with their plan and they post how it went, there is so much support. And this is what I love the most. This is really what I love the most. It's very, very rewarding to see.
So for anybody who's listening who is or is not part of a community, an online community like this, when whatever way you can create in your life an opportunity for you can reach out to support. And that's actually, as anybody who knows Brené Brown's work on vulnerability, that asking for support is a huge sign of courage, not weakness. Okay. That you can stand up and say, listen, this isn't good enough for me and I want more. And ask for people, what ideas do you have or how can I look at this differently? To show that courage and surround yourself with people that make you feel good and move forward. So whatever sort of group that is, yes, surround yourself with people that make you feel like getting up and moving forward and learning more the next day. I think that is something that is important for people as one very concrete step to ask yourself, am I surrounding myself with people that make me feel good and want to move forward? And am I stepping up with courage, vulnerability, to get the support that I need? Because everybody needs it. I mean, we don't move. People have containers when they move abroad for a reason, because they can't move everything by themselves. No one shames someone else for asking a company to move your things, right? Just like, why would we shame someone else for asking someone to support you to get your life moving?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, what you had mentioned before about, you know, couples breaking up and depression, I mean, the rate of divorce and the rate of depression and anxiety among expats is sky high. And I don't necessarily think that that's totally preventable, nor should it be. Some couples are going to break up. Some people maybe need to experience depression to realize that a situation is not right for them. But much of it is probably preventable. If you can find the right support and find it early. In fact, anticipate it, expect it. So, you know, I didn't find these Facebook groups until I had already had a baby. But what I would advise somebody now, if they're pregnant or going to get pregnant, is start doing the research now. Set up friendships and, you know, classes and activities long before you ever have that baby.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Start networking long before you hope to find a job, you know, because there's a lot of resources out there and you don't want to wait until you're feeling depressed and lonely to seek them out.
No, because the energy that you'll have with you will be completely different than being proactive. So I want to, you know, recap that anticipate difficulty, whether you're moving abroad for an 18-month assignment with your partner or you're the one going abroad indefinitely, whatever your situation is, know that there are ups and downs. And two, anticipate that support is important and proactively invite people in your life now, because when times get tough, you're going to be so thankful to have each other. And likewise, you will be thankful that you can support when your friend is going through a hard time, because when you're stuck, it's very hard to support other people. So this is from both sides, that everybody benefits when those relationships are created and established proactively.
Absolutely.
So Allison, I could talk to you all day long, but I have just one last topic. So I don't know if I'm letting a secret out or not, but you are on your way to one part of the expat journey, and that's repatriation.
Yes.
So tell me, how are you feeling about it, and what is the thing that's on your mind the most?
Well, at the moment, I'm feeling completely overwhelmed because I've only known for about a week. I've been flying around doing interviews for professor jobs, and I finally just accepted one last week. I'll be a professor of music at Furman University in Greenville, South Carolina, starting in August.
That's so exciting. Congratulations.
So I'm really so excited. I think my primary concern is my kids, because, and after all, you know, going through the expat experience really does help you build resilience. I know that I will be just fine no matter what happens. And that's another thing. It's another thread, you know. I have gone through some pretty incredibly tough times, but having done that, I really feel like a very strong person. I know I'm going to be fine with any challenge I face. But my kids, I'm a little bit worried. They're very happy here. They're happy little Swiss kids, and I do worry about the transition. So that's on my mind quite a bit.
I get that. I totally get that. So just to recap, if you are an expat and you've gone through tons of ups and downs, and now you're anticipating repatriation. I know a lot of people are afraid about repatriation because there's mm-hmm. some, you know, negative stories out there. Know deep down that you have what you've already gone through has created the strategies and strength to move forward, and yes. those same resources will be very valuable to you when you repatriate.
Yes.
So that's something I think people forget is how strong they are and actually how much has worked and what they did that was successful. So if you're listening and you're heading towards repatriation, and this is also for you, Allison, sounds like you get, like, no, word for word, what have I done that works? What are my strategies that serve me? And what are my trigger points where I know that things are going down a slippery slope fast and I need to pull back? So those are some things with repatriation. Regarding kids, I think everybody, I mean, I'm a mom, I've moved my kids. I think they were in 3 schools in 1 year last year. It is scary to move your kids, you know, and put them through transition. I get that. The same thing I would say just to you, Allison, you're going to have conversations with your kids about change. You're going to share with them your ups and downs and how you manage through it. So you are the perfect person to support your kids through their challenges of transition.
I hope so. We certainly do plan on talking about it a lot and sharing our feelings and hoping to make it as smooth as possible for them.
And for people who are listening for resources on making transitions with kids, there's 2 books I can think of at the top of my head. That's Third Culture Kids. It's like the Bible for cross-cultural or third culture kids. And the other one, and I'll have to put this in the notes because I can't remember the author. It's Emotional Resilience and the Expat Child. I believe it's Julia Simmons, but I'd have to look back at my notes to make sure. Those are 2 references that people can go to when you're thinking about transitioning with your kids.
And there's also the Facebook page, I Am a Triangle.
Yes, exactly, from Natalie Hadaway. And there's a ton of Third Culture Kid Facebook groups as well that people can go to for teens, for young people.
People talk about Facebook, and there are pros and cons, but I have to tell you, as an expat, I'm very grateful that Facebook exists.
For so many reasons. I mean, because we live mobile lives, and that's a great way to meet, to have community wherever you go.
Yeah.
So can you leave us with just, if you have one piece of advice for expats that are either living long-term in their partner's country or they're the sort of classic rotational expat life, what advice do you have for anyone who's listening and who's feeling particularly grumpy?
You know, earlier you were saying, you know, are you to check in with yourself and see if you're taking care of your needs and meeting your needs. I often say to one of my toddlers, if they're having a meltdown and whining and crying, I just look them in the face and I say, sweetheart, tell mommy what you need. What do you need? What does Sophia need? And I find that this is very disarming because because then the child might just need a hug. Or might not even need anything other than me acknowledging that they might feel they have a need. And so I encourage everyone to ask themselves that. What do I need? Is it that, do I need to call in sick and take the day off and spend the day walking? Do I need to make Skype appointments with my 3 best friends back home and just sit with a bottle of wine with them and talk on Skype? Do I need to find a local therapist? Do I need to dive into a German class? But take the time for yourself to really look inward and ask yourself, what do I need right now? And see if you can put your fears and worries about the future just aside temporarily and focus on what you need to make you feel okay in that moment.
Wow. Yes, absolutely. I think if you boiled it down to one core thing, I can't think of anything that's more important than getting your needs met. So on that note, Allison,
that thing, that's
everything. Oh no, that's universal. That is totally universal, Allison. So thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure.
It has been such a pleasure, and all the best in your repatriation. You know who you can call if you want to grump.
I will take you up on that.
All right, you guys, how amazing was it to have Allison today? I am left. First of all, I'm like, she should have her own radio show because she's got such a presence. Amazing. So, Allison, thank you so much. And I just want to recap. These ideas are very simple. It's connection. It's support. It is creating and finding community. We just boil it down to the basics. So if you're feeling like absolute garbage today, the one thing you need to think about is just taking care of yourself and focusing on what can I do to feel some connection today. And that might be going to the grocery store, it might be picking up Skype, but focusing on connection and support, because there's so many advantages to expat life. When things get rough and we get stuck and it gets frustrating, we hold ourselves back from what is good in the long term. And I think if we boil down the strategies from today, connection and support and community are the things that will get us back to when it's great. You've been listening to Expat Happy Hour with Sunday Bean. Thank you for listening. And in the words of Confucius, a Chinese thinker and social philosopher, and remember, no matter where you go, there you are. And I would add, so go out and make the most of it, no matter where that is.